The trading floor is closed. It's time to cut through the chatter and find the clarity. From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk After the Bell. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Good afternoon, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Joe Vaclavic here, Standard Grain, filling in for Chip. I'm only here because I didn't win the lottery. And I thought maybe for a second that Chip had won because of the way that he just up and disappeared and left us here. But here we are today on a lovely Wednesday afternoon. I am with celebrity ag broadcaster Tyne Morgan. Tyne, how are you?
Well, I didn't win the lottery either, so obviously I could be doing better.
So you're still a celebrity ag broadcaster.
You know, the celebrity's a big word that comes with a lot of expectations, and I just feel like that's really a lot to put on me, Joe.
We have high expectations for the news segment today, so
let's lower those.
Markets were mixed today. Very unexciting, uninspired trade in the ag commodities. Corn was a little lower, beans a little higher, wheat a little lower. Cattle were mixed, so this is just kind of a slow day today. My phones were ringing. I think some farmers, at least in some places, are starting to get back into the field or at least thinking about it.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a minute, but I'll try to find some inspiration in the news. Joe, you know, corn futures seen slight pressure today across the board. It was pressure later in the day that erased some of the gains made earlier Wednesday morning. Looking just at December futures, prices holding above the 100-day moving average. I mean, right now, looking at prices today, how essential is that 100-day moving average, Joe?
I don't think it's that important necessarily. I think the most important thing to me is that funds have essentially covered all of their net short position in the corn. So our big short covering event is over. And now we're going to get farmers back in the field here. Mm-hmm. Is there going to be a lot more farmers selling that pressures this thing? That's my question about the dynamics about that market, I think.
But what's the next test, do you think, technically? I mean, do you think closing above Monday's high of 378.5 in December could trigger, like, let's say, a dime rally in this market?
Sure, that would be a big positive short term. There's some big technical levels up at that 386, 388. One of those is our high back from late July, and then the other one is the 50% retracement of the whole sell-off from May through September. So that upper 380s is a key level.
Well, looking at harvest, Joe mentioned it, but drier weather, warmer weather, it's entering the Corn Belt. That should help dry things up and allow for harvest to kick back up in most places, both this week and next. December corn futures closing at 374.25, down a penny. March, 0.75 cents lower at 386.25. May corn prices ending at 393.25. Now, turning to soybeans, it was a narrow trading range for soybeans today. Prices went from seeing small gains to small losses, back to small gains. January futures hit above the 100-day moving average. Traders continue to hear reports of greater yield damage to soybeans in portions of the Midwest from the recent heavy rains, as well as the snow. But Joe, I mean, how big of yield losses do we need to see to cause a considerable reduction in this overall monstrous yield that USDA is still pegging?
Oh, it's a tough question. I mean, even I don't know how much they'd have to take off of it. And I don't even know if anything's going to come off of it as a result of this. I mean, we've seen harvest delays before. I mean, this one was maybe particularly bad because of the amount of rain and the cold weather that came along with it in some situations. So it's really tough to say. We've got Ken Morrison on the show, and we're going to ask him that very question.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, looking at prices, November soybean futures ended the day up a penny at 885.75. January beans up, but only by half a penny at 899.75. Now, wheat futures seeing pressure today. That's after running out of momentum Tuesday. It's both hard red wheat and soft red wheat futures looking at losses anywhere from 6 to 7 cents. Now, looking at December soft red wheat futures, that contract rose to a two-week high Tuesday, but closed lower. And it's that weakness showing through again today. That could signal that there's a lack of confidence for a rebound in U.S. export sales anytime this market sees a rally. Those export sales out tomorrow, right, Joe?
Yes, that is the name of the game. Exports are, some people believe they'll improve during the second half of the marketing year. Other people believe that we have no shot of hitting USDA projections, which will only add additional bushels onto an already burdensome balance sheet. Also, there's some technical stuff here. This Kansas City wheat market, if you look at the chart, we've been stuck in a 35-cent range for weeks now, from I think 499 up to 535 or so, somewhere in that ballpark. And we got up to the upper end of it and couldn't break out.
Yeah, we're staying in that range. Kansas City wheat futures showing 7 cent losses today, closing at 521. December wheat futures down 6 cents today, ending at 517.5. All right, moving to livestock real quick. Live and feeder cattle futures under pressure today from a lack of guidance from the cash market. The premium live cattle futures held to recent cash prices. But, you know, traders really continue to look ahead to Friday's cattle on feed report, which is expected to show record feedlot inventories. That's no secret, right, Joe?
No, it's no secret. I think the trade's always interested in the numbers, though, because there always seems to be some sort of surprise in these cattle on feed reports. They seem to be chronically bearish. We'll see if we can change it up this time around, I guess.
Yeah, October live cattle up 27 cents today at 112.92. December closed 40 cents lower at 117.37. All right, to close out livestock, lean hog futures bleeding red across the board today. Prices are seeing pressure by follow-through selling after Tuesday's a low-range close. But a resurgence of African swine fever in China, another case hitting today, that's limiting pressure on futures. It's still unclear if the outbreak will lead to increased export sales for pork anytime soon. Joe, you mentioned those export sales, but before we get to that, December hogs were 217 lower at 54.70. February closing 167 lower at 62.57. Like I said, African swine fever, another case. Really, though, keeping an eye to see if that will cause more exports, more need for our pork.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but we have some trade issues with China.
I hadn't heard. I've been living under a rock. I had not heard. Yeah. So
I say that sarcastically, but this is all a big wild card here because we don't know exactly how bad the swine fever deal is, and we don't know if it's going to result in more demand for U.S. pork ultimately. So there are a lot of question marks here, definitely.
All right. Well, that's a check of your news on this. It's Wednesday. I keep forgetting what day it is on this Wednesday.
Thank you very much, Tyne. Let's go to the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, get a feel from the floor from Todd, Bubba Horwitz, Bubba Trading. Bubba, how you doing?
What's up, Joe? How you doing, man?
What are you watching today?
Oh, I'm watching equity. I'm watching everything, and everything's kind of a big jumbled mess. I think the grains did almost what you would expect. They almost made highs on Monday and Tuesday, and then they just pulled back a little bit today. I don't see any issue there. I think we're going higher, and I think wheat's just in a solid consolidation, man. I think it's going to break out to the upside. So that's what I'm looking at. I'm still on the blue side of the card in the grain market.
What makes you friendly? Is it a chart read? Is it something fundamentally? Is it something seasonally?
I think it's a combination of all, Joe. You got A, I think the charts look really solid. B, I think the equities are gonna start to see some pressure, which will bring some money into the alternative investments, which would be grains and livestock. And I do think that the trade wars are a non-issue and they will settle. So for all those reasons, I think we're going much higher.
You said that you think the trade war is going to settle. How exactly do you envision that happening?
I envision Trump getting his way. He so far has been able to do so with Canada. He's been able to do so with Mexico. I think he'll get there with the EU. And then I think China is just trying to wait and see what these midterms bring. And I think the midterms are going to bring not a blue wave. I think it's going to portray pretty much status quo. And I think once that happens, they're going to be forced to act because their equities are getting crushed, and they're going to have they're having some major uprising in China right now, and it looks like there may be a revolt coming.
Could it be as early as the G20 meeting next month?
It could. I mean, you know, there could be. I don't think there will be a deal done by then, but there could be talks like there will be a deal done, very similar to what happened with Canada and Mexico before those deals got done. I don't see a deal getting done, immediately, but as long as there's positive momentum going that way, I think that would clear the air.
Very good. Thanks, Bubba. That's Todd Bubba Horwitz from Bubba Trading.
Thanks, Joe
Vaklavik, Standard Grain, filling in for Chip today. I will be back with Ken Morrison from Morrison on the Markets here on AgriTalk ATB.
We're live on the red carpet, waiting for the next generation Credenz soybean. There he is.
Oh, Ed, look, it's Credenz Liberty Link GT27.
I know, Adna. He's got elite genetics.
You gotta love his 4 bushel per acre yield advantage.
And he's both Liberty and glyphosate herbicide tolerant.
Definitely the year's hottest performer. Ask your Credenz retailer about the new Credenz Liberty Link GT27 soybeans.
Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Welcome to No Man's Land, a new podcast from U.S. Farm Report host Tyne Morgan.
Bacon is the gateway for a lot of people who are vegetarian.
That has to sink into our listeners. Bacon is the gateway meat.
I invite you to join me each week as I shine a spotlight on powerful women in agriculture while empowering all women in agriculture, going where no man has gone before.
No Man's Land with Tyne Morgan is available where you access your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
Growers face enough worries today. SDS and nematodes shouldn't be among them. Alevo seed treatment from BASF is the only product that offers effective protection against both SDS and nematodes throughout the critical growing period. Growers get amazing early season protection for stronger profit potential at harvest. So worry about weather. Don't worry about SDS or nematodes with Alevo. To find out more about Alevo and how to protect your soybeans, talk to your seed dealer or your BASF rep. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Are you paying too much for fuel and fertilizer? Verify you're getting the best price with Inputs Monitor from Farm Journal Media. Knowing the low, average, and high price quotes from dealers in your area for fertilizers and farm fuels can save you thousands of dollars. Inputs Monitor gives you an easy, anonymous method to compare fertilizer and fuel prices from across the Midwest. Plus, get grower-focused buying advice, local pricing charts, industry news, and purchase alerts so you don't miss any critical buying opportunities. Visit InputsMonitor.com for subscription information. That's InputsMonitor.com. Unbiased and farmer-focused, Inputs Monitor is the newest and best tool to help growers buy inputs at exactly the right time. Before you book your next fertilizer or fuel contract, verify you're getting a fair price with Inputs Monitor. Learn more at InputsMonitor.com. That's InputsMonitor.com.
Markets move fast. Keep pace with the experts right here on AgriTalk After the Bell.
Welcome back to ATB, everybody. Joe Vaklavik, Standard Grain, non-lottery winner here, filling in for Chip today. Remember, if you want to get a hold of us, best way is on Twitter, hashtag ChipATB. You can follow me at Standard Grain. We've got Ken Morrison, Morrison on the Markets, on the show today. Ken, how are you?
I'm great, Joe. Thanks for having me on. Always glad to do it.
I appreciate you filling in last minute. I actually knew I was hosting the show like 3 weeks ago, but I failed to book a guest, and I did so this morning, so thank you.
Well, are you enjoying Tennessee living?
Oh, I love it. It's mostly hot, and now it's cooled off a little bit just in the last couple days. But when it was snowing up north, it was like, you know, 80 degrees here, so it's a little bit different. It's a little bit different.
Yes, it is.
Well, I have a list of topics here to talk about. I am guaranteed to stray from my list, but we're going to start off with something we mentioned in the last segment, which is the wheat market and wheat exports in particular. We had a USDA official acknowledge the fact that, you know, they've been under fire because of their export projection, but he believes that these exports are going to improve in the second half of the marketing year. Is that going to happen?
Well, I think they're obviously going to improve. I called USDA's decision to leave wheat and soybean exports unchanged in the October report as a gutsy move. But I think wheat will certainly improve as the year goes on. I think it's valid reason to doubt whether we get to their forecast, but they will improve, yes.
Now, so in terms of improvement, I mean, are we going to hit USDA projections? Do we improve by that much? Do we gain that much ground?
Well, I think we'll come up within 50 million bushel, give or take, of where they are now. So, I'm comfortable with that. So
we'll be close. So you have no big issue there?
No, not a big issue. I was just surprised that, you know, you looked at where we are in sales relative to the full year forecast, and it was like a 20-year low. So I thought on the basis of that, and I think the number was like we're at 37% of the full year commitments relative to sales. And I just thought on the basis of that, they just kind of, you know, wind it down a little bit, but they didn't. So, you know, we'll go another month and see what happens.
I think the way the wheat market is priced here is kind of interesting. Both Kansas City and Chicago wheat futures, spot month contracts, we're a good dollar a bushel above where we were at this same point last year. You cannot say the same for the row crops. What do you think the difference is year over year? The carryout projections aren't that different.
Well, I think we've got the trend going in the right direction in terms of global wheat supplies, so I think the trend is in our favor. Again, the expectation that between the concern about Russian exports exceeding, let's say, to pick a number, 35 million tons of wheat, and the, you know, lesser quality that Russia has to offer this year. For example, I saw one of the analysts from Russia today mentioned that in the second most important wheat growing region for export, the milling quality wheat is down about 10% relative to last year. And that wasn't a surprise to me, but it is a reminder that in terms of there's two reasons to believe that U.S. exports will pick up the pace a bit, just on a quality and quantity standpoint.
We've seen a big correction in the stock market here. Well, last week we did, and we were attempting to recover here this week. I've heard it mentioned, and Bubba mentioned it earlier. You know, if you see a big decline in the equities, maybe that pushes some money in the commodities. I don't know if I necessarily buy that. What's your thought on the stock market, and does it have an impact on our grain markets?
I've never believed in that theory. I think, you know, those people tend to operate with two different mandates, if you will, in terms of managing money on futures relative to equities and versus commodities. So I'm not a big buyer of that. I think you made a valid point earlier that it is important to recognize that managed money funds in corn have a small net long position for the first time since June. I think they at their most short level in September, they got to like 155,000 contracts net short. So yeah, I think in terms of the upward pressure that short covering has had on the market, that's behind us now. I'm not personally convinced that translates into, oh my gosh, the funds want to get long now. If you look at the track record of funds, they've not had a good year, Joe, and so it could be very well a possibility that managed money funds in corn particularly are just saying, hey, I just want to go to the sidelines for the final 3 months of this year and call it a year. So, I think the short covering aspect's important. Where we go from here, to be named. I don't know.
Now, let's talk about another group. Let's talk about another group of traders. Farmer selling has been kind of light because of these delays that we've seen. And I'm going to cover the delays and their impact on the crop in the next segment here. But are we going to see more farmer selling emerge here as harvest during the next several days, next week? Is that something you foresee?
My rule of thumb from my many years in the cash market is, when you're going to get selling off the combine, it tends to occur at about the 65 to 70% harvested standpoint. So I expect that's going to happen. From, you know, if you believe the consensus is to the extent the farmers are tight on storage space, they're going to move corn and not soybeans. I mean, you look at the carrying charges in corn relative to beans, that makes sense to me also. I think carrying charges in beans are about as wide as they're going to go now. So, you know, I'd be socking the beans away if you're hedged for sure. And in fact, I've bull spread the Noves 18 versus or 19 versus 18 on Monday at 61 cents. And, you know, I think they're as wide as they're going to be.
Let's talk basis real quick. We're going to have a storage crunch this year. I mean, maybe more. So we've had that a lot recently, but there's going to be a lot of grain that's not going to have a place to go necessarily. We've dealt with some historically very poor basis levels for corn and soybeans this year. Is that a trend that you see continuing?
Of course, barge freight has a lot to do with what the basis does. We're also going to have some regional space shortages, for example, the Dakotas and Minnesota, you know, those PNW-oriented markets, especially on the bean side, just basically have been non-existent. So I think those are going to be kind of separate line item issues to deal with. But, yeah, I don't see a particular need for a strong basis, certainly into the, you know, into early 2019. I think that's going to be with us for a while. I suppose to some degree it's hard to put a number on it, but the high water, for example, is going to keep barge freight relatively high. I wouldn't be too optimistic of a big basis swing over the next 60 days for sure.
I wanted to go back to something you said about the carry real quick. This just popped into my head, but you said you don't think that the bean spreads are going to get much wider. How does a farmer play that? What are the implications if you're a farmer, you're out in the field right now, you're harvesting beans and you don't think this carry is getting any wider?
I have a view about, as I mentioned earlier, I'm bull spread noves to noves, 18 versus 19. But I also have a strong feeling, and I've been covering this a lot in my newsletter over the past week. People are probably tired of reading it by now. But I really think that people need to seriously start considering getting some price protection for for their 2019 crop. So, you know, if you're hedged in beans right now, it makes sense for a couple of reasons. First of all, I don't think the carry is going to widen any from here. I think it's going to narrow. But by rolling your hedges forward to November of 2019, I mean, you can pencil it if you have space, especially on farm, you can pencil to carry your 2018 crop into 2019. So I just think it makes a lot of sense to put some sales on in November 2019 beans, whether you are rolling hedges or just selling them outright or both.
Now, if you're not rolling hedges and you're looking at a November board, 944 today, that's not a price that's going to get anybody real excited. That might not even be a price that makes anybody any money. How do you convince somebody to do that?
Can they stay in business? I think that is the whole question that you have to answer. I don't know if you saw my Twitter poll earlier in the week, but I put out a Twitter poll, and it went something like this. The question was, crop producers, it's too early to have price protection on at least 20% of 2019 production of. And I gave them the choices of corn, soybeans, winter wheat, and cotton. Soybeans was the winner. In other words, producers, at 45% of the people who responded to the poll, 45% of the producers said, or I guess they were producers, said it's too early to even have 20% price protection on 2019 soybean production. That shocks me. It shocks me because I think there's a very real chance that we'll end this crop year with a billion bushel of beans in storage. I think there's a possibility that we'll end 2020 with over a billion beans in storage. So that's where I'm coming from. And I can
Hey Ken, we're going to cut to a break here. We're going to pick this up in the next segment. Ken Morrison, Morrison on the Markets. Joe back, they filling in for Chip. We'll be back in a minute.
Times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Top Third Ag Marketing puts the farmer first with a marketing plan that manages risk in every market condition. We protect the downside, and we're more than just about puts. We'll use a strategy based on the current market conditions and your circumstances. Make your plan today. Let Top Third help.
Top Third Ag Marketing, farmer first with a plan for every market. Call us at 877-TT-HEDGE today. That's 877-TT-HEDGE. Futures trading involves the substantial risk of loss.
It's time for Tech Talk here on ATB. We've got Pro Farmer, Senior Market Economist Dan Bott in the ATB studio. Dan, which is the market move that matters the most today?
Hey, Joe, I'm looking at December crude oil futures today. As you know, the crude oil market has been involved in a sustained uptrend since mid-2017. The market seemingly peaked at $75.27 per barrel on July 3rd, but fell all the way to $64.43 on August 16th, where it rebounded from its 200-day moving average. The December contract reached a new high at $76.72 on October 3rd and seemed headed even higher, but it's turned decidedly lower lately. In fact, today's $2 breakdown carried it below its 40-day moving average. The low range closed at $69.70, as well as a drop from a small bear flag formation, both point to further short-term losses. But the uptrend is still intact, as indicated by major support at the 200-day moving average around 67.25.
Thank you very much, Dan. That is Pro Farmer's senior market economist, Dan Bott. You can check out his work on profarmer.com.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
Control your destiny in a challenging dairy industry at Farm Journal Media's Milk Business Conference, November 5th through the 7th in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. Register today to network with fellow dairy owners at milkbusinessconference.com.
Go behind the scenes of Ag Day and get straight talk on the issues pushing agriculture. Introducing Farm Sense, a new podcast from Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths.
Join me each week as I go beyond the headlines and get personal. My goal is to take a common sense approach to tackling real life problems. Perspective rooted in my rural upbringing and featuring some of the best minds agriculture has to offer.
Farm Sense with Clinton Griffiths is available where you access your favorite podcast, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
You know what the markets did today. We've got the map for tomorrow. This is AgriTalk After the Bell with Chip Flory.
Welcome back to ATB, everybody. Joe Vac, Nick Standard Grain, filling in for Chip, who is out today. Davis is out today. They left me all by myself. Time is here for a little bit. Remember, if you need to get a hold of us on Twitter, hashtag ChipATB. We had to cut Ken Morrison off, but we've got him back, and we were going to ask him about the 1 billion bushel soybean carryout that he believes is possible. So, Ken, you think a billion is doable?
Which year are we talking?
18, 19.
18-19, I also think it's probably doable for 20 by the end of crop year ending 20. Joe, the way I pencil out the exports, they're running behind where I thought we would be at this point in time.
Trade war continues, they're still behind where you thought they'd be.
Yeah, we're still behind where we thought we'd be, where I thought we would be. I made an assumption back in August that whether or not the tariff wars were settled by now or not, I made the assumption that I thought China would have to come to the U.S. for about 15 million beans between October and January. Well, October is just about gone, and we're seeing that they've hardly lifted anything that's on the books, much less not bought anything. So I've wound my number back a little bit. Right now, I'd say that there's a swing factor somewhere between hitting the USDA soybean export projection and a worst case that we miss it by about 250 million bushels if China somehow manages not to take very many beans at all from the U.S. During this crop year. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. But, you know, we're talking for the crop year ending 2019, we're not talking a big change here. If I'm over a billion bushel for the possibility of year ending 19, you know, that's only, what, 100 and some odd million bushel above where the projections mm-hmm. are currently. So I think there's a risk there. And then I put a pencil to and made an assumption that we would decrease soybean acreage in 19 by about 4 million acres and increase corn by the same amount. Mm-hmm. And you pencil that out using the same demand as we're projecting for 18 and 19, and I come up with over a billion bushel of beans carried out by the crop year ending 2019-20. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. But, Joe, there's a more basic rule of thumb in the grain markets, and I think it should be applying to soy. The rule of thumb is in a large supply situation, the carry is wide, and the next contract tends to seek the price level by which the nearby contract expires. Now, mm-hmm. we've seen that play out in wheat in spades over the last two or three years with the burdensome wheat supplies. We've seen it play out to some degree in corn, where the next contract seeks the price level that the current contract goes off the board at. I think we're going to see it in beans. Therefore, that's why I say, you know, yes, 940 may not be the best way to put your P&L together for 2019, but it could be worse. So you got to figure out if you're going to stay in business by booking some there.
So you paint a pretty ugly picture of what is going to happen or what could happen, say, during the next 12 months. Even if you assume that we reduce soybean acreage, you're assuming here that we're going to maintain a situation of oversupply in really both of these markets, corn and soybeans. What is there that could change this? I mean, does it have to be a trade deal? Does it have to be a weather issue? Does it have to be both?
Let's talk about the trade deal. First of all, I think we all have to assume normal crops, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, yep. You can't build a balance sheet on the basis of hope for some disaster somewhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there might be. So if that happens, you have to adjust to it. But balance sheets are built on normalcy. But let's talk about the trade issue. You know, people talk about, you know, the common phrase is when the trade talks or when the trade war is settled, there seems to be a common feeling that all of a sudden it's going to be nirvana in terms of China's demand for soybeans. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if that's – I don't even think it's fair to even talk in terms of trade talks. There are no issues on the table, nor have there been any issues on the table over the last 3 months that have anything to do with China. It's all about IP. It's all about the oversubsidization of state-owned enterprises. Those are the issues, and at least those are the spoken issues, and those seem to be the talking points that you're hearing out of Washington. So I don't understand what people's expectations are when they say, oh, well, I think the trade talks are going to be settled and everything's going to be fine. I just don't see where that impacts trade. The first thing I do see is that Brazilian soybean premiums are probably going to converge with U.S. soybean premiums. And for Brazil, that probably means downside of 80 or 90 cents a bushel relative to where they are even for the new crop. So that's what I see happening here, is that that's going to be the primary impact on the day that we walk in and things are all back to normal and China has lifted the tariffs on U.S. soybeans. I don't really know why that necessarily means the demand for U.S. soybeans is suddenly going to surge.
So you think this is something that's going to take a lot more than just a handshake with between Trump and President Xi, and it's all going to go away? It's more prolonged than that.
On those issues that seem to be the sticking points, and quite frankly, the rhetoric from the U.S. side has only been ratcheted up over the last 2 weeks, not down. On those issues that are talked about from the U.S. side as the issues, IP and subsidy of state-owned enterprises, those are not trade issues. Mm-hmm. You know, Brazil is having no trouble getting soybeans into China. So there is no trade issue related to soybeans in getting beans into China.
It's just collateral damage because of the other issues.
I see the world differently than others.
Yeah. So we've heard a lot of people say, and Bubba said it too when he was on the show, he said, you know, China has major economic problems that will eventually force them to the negotiating table. Is that not the way you see it?
I don't think the stock market in Shanghai means a twit to the Chinese leadership if the issue is basically a U.S. challenge of China's long-term economic policy.
And this has been a long-term economic policy.
The sophisticated technology engine for the world. So, you know, that is the rub right now with the U.S. They see them as a threat economically.
Okay, let's go another topic here. I wanted to talk U.S. weather and what we've seen here over the last couple of weeks. You know, USDA reduced its corn yield a couple of weeks ago. There are some who believe that because we've seen so much rain and adverse conditions here recently, you know, maybe we could shave some more off of these yields. What are you seeing in terms of U.S. production here?
Well, I don't think we've seen enough to know yet, Joe. What I did take a look at is I said to myself, okay, if we're wrong about U.S. export demand on soybeans being 250 million bushel too high, then that would be the equivalent of a 3 bushel per acre yield difference on the current yield estimate. So that would be a wash. In other words, if the U.S. soybean yields were 50 bushel instead of 53, then that would offset, even if in the worst case that we found out that our demand numbers were too high, but 250 million bushel. So that's kind of the way I've looked at it. But we just don't know from a quality standpoint or from a yield standpoint from those areas that have had so much rain. We don't know yet what the impact is. I think the market may be assuming that the yields will be lower, but I wouldn't make that judgment at this point in time.
Three bushels off the national bean yield would be asking quite a bit, even
exactly. That's my point. Yes,
I gotcha. Okay, so we talked about acreage a little bit. We talked about the crop. Anything else you see coming out from USDA here on the demand side potentially that could be a wild card?
This is not on the demand side, but I think it's an important issue, Joe. Rather than talk about the trade and tariff wars, I think what for agriculture, the most highly potential change that could occur is going to be related to a current dispute that the U.S. filed back in 2016 with the WTO that would change the tariff rate quota that China has on grain, whereby if a change were to occur according to the U.S. suggestion, it would increase the amount of low tariff quota, import quota, that would be given to the private sector. I see that as a much more important issue to trade than anything else I see not going on with China related to trade.
Can you explain that in layman's terms?
Yeah. China annually under WTO, for example, is mandated to allocate up to 7 million tons of 1% tariff for corn import to the industry. Only 30%, or let's put real numbers on it, only 3 million tons of that is allocated to the private sector. So let's call that 120 million bushels annually. The U.S. contends that, and the wheat allocation to the private is the only 10%, and so that's even more egregious. But for example, if they were required by WTO to amend the tariff rate quota allocated to the private sector of, let's say, to use a number, 50 to 70% instead of 30%, then obviously that would give the incentive for China to import more corn if it's competitive.
Very good. I gotcha. Ken, we are about running out of time here. I want to thank you again for being on the show. That's Ken Morrison, Morrison on the Markets. I'm Joe Vac, Vic Standard Grain, filling in for Chip today. We will be back here on ATB. I hope Ken was wrong about some of the things that he said, but you got to worry that he may be right. He's a smart guy. We'll be back here on ATB. We'll be right back.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This two DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project, so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Farmers are busy harvesting across the country, and most are using the data they collect to evaluate the outcome of the products and the inputs that were used on each field this year. Channel seedsman Adam Piggott from Cleghorn, Iowa, is here to tell us about the Channel Field Checkup Series using field data and the Channel Custom Crop Report. Adam, give us an overview of the Channel Field Checkup Series.
The Field Checkup Series is a series of on-farm visits conducted by a seedsman during crucial stages such as seedling, vegetative, reproductive, and maturity stages. Seedsmen utilize Climate Field View to collect the data so they can include very crucial information and share that with the grower.
So you've got all this data coming in from the field. How do the Channel seedsmen then turn that around and put it to use for their growers?
Seedsmen are using digital tools such as Climate Field View for the Channel Field Checkup Series to really help us document observations from farmers' fields and to communicate that through digital technology to the grower.
All right, tell me a little bit more about Field View and how the Channel Field Checkup Series works.
First, the farmer needs to share his data through Field View with his channel seedsman. The seedsman will then compile all the data throughout the season and create a custom crop report to send to that grower. That crop report can really be sent at any time. I like to send my custom crop reports after collecting all the data through the season and get that to the guys after the maturity stage of Field Checkup Series.
Gotcha. All right. Thanks, Adam. Next time we'll hear more about how the Channel Custom Crop Report is used to begin planning for next season's crops. Farmers can learn more about the Channel Field Checkup Series at channel.com. And you can find Channel on Twitter and Facebook. Just search Channel Seed.
It's time to get dirt rich with new Poncho Votivo 2.0 corn seed treatment. The increase in microbial activity in the soil helps get more nutrients to the plant, and you get an average 3.8 bushel per acre yield increase over the original Poncho Votivo, all with the trusted insect and nematode protection you're used to. So be dirt rich, because that's smart. Ask your seed dealer for the new Poncho Votivo 2.0 today. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Maximize your grain quality, yield, and profit this season with ProSaro Fungicide from Bayer.
Welcome back to ATB, everybody. Joe Vakovic, Standard Grain, filling in for Chip today. Also filling in for Davis. Everybody's out. It's just me all by myself. We had Ken Morrison on the show, and he had some scary outlook on these markets. This soybean thing in particular, the possibility or maybe probability at this point of a billion bushel bean carry out following the 18-19 marketing year is not a positive. And I think that, you know, he mentioned the 2019 crop and the idea that, you know, doing some marketing there may not be a bad idea given the prospects and given the outlook. And this is just a tough situation. You can't fix a deal like this. I mean, even with the enormous carry in the market, $9.44 is not a price that's going to get anybody real excited here. So it's just, this is tricky, tricky stuff. And if he's correct, and we end up in bear market territory where we got something close to a billion bushel carryout for two consecutive years, and we continue to run these spot month contracts down to where the previous contract left off, 945 may end up looking like a good sale. So I know that, you know, a lot of people in the marketing business or the grain marketing advisory business are constantly telling you, you got to know your numbers, you got to know your numbers, you got to know your numbers. I mean, if it doesn't apply going into this 2019 year, I don't know when it ever applied, because this is some really serious stuff. Now, on the corn front, I certainly know some farmers and some people who have made some 2019 sales. I think anything above $4, you know, over the last 4 years, you know, we've been stuck in this range in the corn market since, say, mid-2014, where spot month futures have just been $3 up to $4.40, basically. Anything in the December futures contract above $4 has been a good sale. And keep in mind that if we're to stay in bear market territory, that's a sale that you will probably be able to roll out to the spring or summer and capture a significant amount of carry. So there may be some opportunities there. The soybean deal is just a tough deal. And even after this rally, I don't know how you make that pencil. And like Ken said, this is just, it could turn into an issue of just, do you want to stay in business or not? And maybe you're going to need to sell some beans at a price that doesn't necessarily make a whole lot of money or any money. The basis is also a big problem issue here. And Ken kind of said that he expects that poor basis situation to stick around for a while. And I don't see any reason for it to change. I mean, unless USDA is really very, very wrong on their crop estimates or something really changes on the demand front, you know, we're going to have a storage crunch this fall and into the winter. We knew that. It's going to keep the cash market under pressure in general. So we've got a lot of problems here. And we have had a rally recently. I mean, this has been a nice bounce. We've got the corn market, what, it bottomed at 342 December futures. We're up to 374 here today. That's a 32 cent rally. That's nothing to turn your nose up at, I don't think. And similar deal in the soybeans. You know, we've had a nice rally off the lows, but keep in mind, this is the time of year when the markets do rally. I mean, October, historically speaking, is about the strongest month of the year for the corn market. It's about the strongest month for the soybean market from a historical standpoint or from a seasonal standpoint. So I don't think it should be any significant or major surprise that we've seen some upside here. I mean, the markets can't go down forever, but I think was what Ken was trying to tell us. And I agree that there's still a lot of problems. There's still a lot of downside risk. I think his take on the trade situation, not his take really, with the facts on the trade situation, is that the trade war was never about soybeans. The trade war is about intellectual property. It's about the way that China handles business practices in a number of different ways. And soybeans are really just been collateral damage more than anything. It's not a trade war that was ever really about soybeans. China used soybeans as a retaliatory measure because that's really the only thing that they had to retaliate with. So yeah, you've got to, I mean, you'd like to be optimistic and think that, you know, something that Bubba said earlier was right, that, you know, know, China makes a deal with us eventually because they're really hurting economically. I fear that it may not be that easy and that this thing could drag out a little bit further than we would like. I really hope that's not the case. You'd hope that we get to the G20 next month and you hope that these guys sit down and you hope that China does want to make a deal. You hope that that maybe Trump concedes on a couple things and that we can call it a victory. But I don't know if it's going to be that easy. And we have had a nice run up. I'm going to be interested to see what USDA says about these yields the next couple months. I think this November report will be an interesting deal, definitely. I mean, all these harvest delays, all this rain, nasty weather, are we going to really trim bushels off the national yield, or is this just more of a localized inconvenience for farmers in portions of the Western Corn Belt, the Northern Plains, and the Southern Plains? It's really tough to say, and I really don't know. I think the fact that USDA reduced their corn yield estimate in October is interesting and could be telling about the November report. Maybe it is a sign of things to come. Maybe we do see another reduction there and give us some upside. But just keep in mind, very shortly here, we're going to start talking about 2019 acreage. And just like Ken said, there's a lot of people out there who believe that corn acreage in 2019 could increase by 3 million, 4 million, 5 million. I mean, pick a number, because you guys see the prices on the board here. The market's telling you to plant corn. It's telling you to maybe plant wheat. It's not telling you to plant soybeans. So we are going to see a very significant acreage shift, I would imagine, this spring, unless something really, really changes here. We did not talk a whole lot about the livestock market. Just keep in mind that, you know, we've been sideways this week for the most part, but we do have a big cattle on feed report out on Friday after the close, and that's going to be your next big data point there. So keep an eye on that. But great stuff from Ken Morrison, Morrison on the Markets. I'm Joe Vaklik, filling in for Chip here today. I think, I don't know if Chip's going to be back tomorrow or not. I guess you'll find out. It'll be a surprise. But I enjoy hosting the show always. Hope you guys enjoyed listening. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, hashtag ChipATB. You can follow me at Standard Grain. Everyone have a wonderful afternoon, and we will catch you next time here on ATB.
Mighty Prosaro, king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it the keeper of grain quality and yield, the hammer of head and leaf diseases, the number one reducer of scab. When your goal is greater wheat quality and higher yield, use Prosaro fungicide, and the crown of higher profit will be yours. Learn more at prosaro.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
We're live on the red carpet, waiting for the next generation Credenz soybean. There he is.
Oh, Ed, look, it's Credenz Liberty Link GT27.
I know, Adna. He's got elite genetics.
You gotta love his 4 bushel per acre yield advantage.
And he's both Liberty and glyphosate herbicide tolerant.
Definitely the year's hottest performer. Ask your Credenz retailer about the new Credenz Liberty Link GT27 soybeans.
Grow smart with BASF. Always read.